Some may find the following disturbing. Discretion is advised.
Welcome, everyone, to a special edition of GTF, Gabriel Talks Football. Greg Gabriel is to your left on the screen. I am to your right, Aldo Gandia. Greg, let's get to it right away. Introduce our guest, please.
Yeah, we got Dane Brugler from The Athletic, who writes the best draft guide in the business, The Beast. And how'd you come up with that name anyway?
Not my idea. I pushed back on it, actually, because I don't know. It sounded a little self-serving, and it wasn't really for me. But then it kept popping up, and fans kept pushing it. And so I relented and said, okay, let's, you know what? It's motivation for me. If you're going to have something called The Beast, it better live up to it every single year. And so now I use it as a source of motivation, and people love it. So I think it works.
I got to say this, and I've told you this before over the phone, but I want to say it here. Number one, it's by far the best guide. And if you want to see something similar to actual NFL reports that scouts write, this is the closest you'll get to it. In fact, there's probably more information in Dane's reports than there is in the average NFL scouting report, because you've got like a small media guide in there for each person, too, where the average scout isn't going to have some of that. But your stuff is terrific. I've told you this once before. You should be working in the league. You do a great job, and hats off to you. Congratulations on that. Just a remarkable.
I appreciate that. No, I treat my job as if I'm a scout. I have so much respect for all the area scouts and the national scouts and all the people around the league that put so much time into building draft boards and building rosters that maybe don't get a ton of credit. And so I've got so much respect for those guys. And that's how I treat my job. There's so many puzzle pieces out there. And my job is to collect as many puzzle pieces to create a more clear picture of who each one of these players are. And, you know, even if you don't agree with every one of my rankings, I think there's something for everybody in the draft guide, whether it's background information or NFL verified testing information, or if you're a casual fan or an NFL big diehard fan, there's something for everybody in here where it could be used as a resource.
You said difference of opinion. And when you're in a scouting room, you know, there might be 6, 7, 8 different reports on one player between scouts, director of player personnel, general manager, position coach, coordinator, etc. Not all of them are going to read the same. There's going to be differences of opinion. And then one person in that room, and it's usually the lead decision maker, so the general manager, for lack of a better word, is the guy who's got to slap the final grade on and say, this is the grade we're going with, and everybody else has to agree with it. So point I'm being is, you could grade a guy a certain way. I could grade a guy a certain way. Daniel Jeremiah could grade a guy a certain way. That doesn't mean that's the way they're going to come off the board come draft day. And then obviously when scheme fits come into play, there might be a guy that you really like that isn't a scheme fit, say, because this is mostly a Bears show, say for the Bears scheme defensively. That doesn't mean that you have it wrong. It's that he's not a fit for the Bears. And I think there's a lot of fans that don't really understand that part when they go, why didn't they take that guy?
But I don't think most fans realize how small most draft boards are, right? I mean, there's I grade everyone just because, again, this is a resource guide. I don't want to include everybody in there. And I'm doing this from a generalized point of view. But most team boards are under 150 names. You know, it's very truncated based off of scheme and culture fit. And especially to your point, once coaches get involved, of course, they've got their own opinions about what fits best for what they want to do. And that could be drastically different than what the scouts say. And yeah, I mean, I've talked to scouts who they feel one way about a player, and it's like, oh, okay, this team really likes the player. But then after draft meetings, you present the player to the room, and the room is not as high on the player, and all of a sudden that guy's not an option for this team. And so it's funny how the process works, and how interesting it is with the draft boards, and just how smaller they are than, and some are, you know, Bill Belichick was known for his very small draft boards. Other teams are a little more liberal. They're, you know, 150, 175 names, but for the most part, they're still very, very smaller, summarized compared to what I think most fans think.
Yeah, when I was with the Giants, so this goes back to 1984 and those drafts up until I went to the Bears. If there, now it started off, there was 12 rounds in the draft when I started there, and just 28 teams. So there was 12 columns of 28 players, which was ridiculous because that could really screw you up because you could have a player, you know, you want to take, quote, the best player available, and there could be a player that just jumps out, which you probably did wrong or it wasn't a scheme fit, but then all of a sudden he becomes a product of discussion because he's there on the board. Well, when I came to Chicago, we streamlined it. And, you know, in most years, if we had our you know, a first round pick or whatever, we might have 120 to 125 names maximum. And we called that our hot list. My last two drafts here, we didn't have, because it was after the Cutler trade, we didn't have a first round pick or second round pick. So it was like, okay, we're starting off in the third round. What are we going to do? Well, now our board was like 75 players because you just eliminated a lot of those guys that you knew were going to go in the first or second round. You put grades on them. Their grade gets transferred over to the pros side of things because you have to have a grade from college. But why waste your time doing it when you know you can't draft them? You know, you can't select them. So spend your time on the guys that you want to have on your football team and that you have an opportunity to select.
Right. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And that's, it is certainly a process, you know, from where the area scouts start way in the summer and really around this time to what it becomes during the season. And then when they do final reports and then you do draft meetings and the All-Star circuit and the combine, it's a really fascinating process that every team does a little bit differently. But for the most part, yeah, it's fascinating no matter what.
Yeah, a little different, but basically it gets down to the same thing. Line them up the right way. You know, regardless of what the grade system is. Go ahead, Aldo. You can say something.
I was just going to jump in because Levante Rogers has a question. He says he can't wait for Dane to talk in depth about Caleb Williams and why he will be the right choice for the Bears. Dane, I've noticed that you have mocked Caleb to the Chicago Bears. Why do you like him in Chicago, and what can Bears fans expect to see out of him?
Yeah, you know, this is a Caleb Williams draft. I think he is the best player in the draft. Whenever you draft a quarterback, you're making a bet. You are saying, okay, I'm going to bet that this the odds are the best that this quarterback's going to hit compared to these other quarterbacks. And with Caleb, there are a few things about his game that I think you can really latch onto and say, okay, this is why it's going to work at the next level. You know, even when things aren't perfect, he has this. And for Caleb, I think it's two things. It's his rare football awareness. I mean, it is, I think, and I try not to use the word rare very often, or just eliminates the meaning of the word. So I do believe he has rare football awareness, and that includes understanding what the defense is trying to do and understands what where his guys are going to be on the field at all times, route concepts, the protection, the way he can move around in the pocket. I think a lot of people think of Caleb Williams as this runaround guy. He can operate from the pocket and negotiate that pass rush. He has a very keen sense for it. Now, sometimes the pocket just collapses and he has to get outside and create it from a new platform and work off schedule, but he can work from within that pocket and buy extra half seconds to go make a play. So that rare football awareness is number one. Number two is just how he's always in a ready-to-throw position. And that's a combination of the base, the body balance, and then, of course, having the velocity in his arm and then accuracy to go make a play. So, you know, both those things together, those are things I'm going to bet on for a quarterback. And is he a perfect prospect? By no means. The fumbles are an issue. I'm encouraged by the lack of interceptions, especially on third down. He had 199 pass attempts at USC the last 2 years on third or fourth down, zero interceptions. Now, the fumbles, that's a different thing. He needs to get better with the ball security, taking care of the ball so he's not putting it on the ground. ground. That's a major concern. And I think just some of the consistencies about reading out, and that's something I think all quarterbacks go through in terms of, you know, you can work left to right, but understanding when to linger on a read and when to move through and say, okay, that's not going to be there. That's not open. You know, I need to go to two. I need to go to three. And just better efficiency moving from read to read. That, but that's something that I think all young quarterbacks work through, especially once you get to the NFL and everything's so much faster at that level. So, but again, everything that Caleb offers, I'm going to bet on that working over the other quarterbacks in this class.
You know, one thing I wanted to talk about, just so there's like a like being in a draft room. In the meetings leading up, where there's a little bit of difference of opinion, say, between two people. And I know we've got a little bit of a difference of opinion on how the wide receivers are lined up, because you've got Harrison number one, Neighbors number two, Odunze number three, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. So I've got Neighbors number one. And I'm not taking anything away from Marvin Harrison. It's just, and I got three coaches I worked with that were real big on this. One was the late Daryl Drake, who was here on Lovie's staff for a while. Then he went to Arizona, finished up in Pittsburgh, died in training camp. He had a heart attack in training camp in 2019. Probably the best wide receiver coach I've ever been around. Tom Coughlin, believe it or not, was a wide receiver coach, never coordinator in the league. Went from being the Giants wide receiver coach for the 1990 season, 91 Super Bowl, went right to Boston College as the head coach. And then Todd Haley was here on Dick Duran's staff. Really good coach. But all these guys, three things they stress: catch radius, run after the catch, and separation. So that's what I look for when I'm looking at a receiver. And then when I get to Neighbors, run after the catch to me is second to none.
Yeah.
And then his separation ability is, I think, the best in this particular draft, how quickly he gets in and out of cuts. What I don't see from Harrison is the run after. It's like I don't want to say the next time you see him make somebody misses the first time, but you usually, in my opinion, when you see him get yards after the catch, it's what's there. And he can run. There's no question he's got speed, but it's not like he's got some juke to him and he's going to make people miss. So that's what I think. But I want to hear, because like, let's say if we're sitting in a room and we're discussing this and it's a week and a half before the draft, now what do you have to say?
No, I think you're spot on with your assessment of the two players, because, and I want to be clear, Marvin Harrison Jr. is my number one, but Malik Neighbors is right there. I mean, we're talking tags are touching on the board. My overall board, Caleb Williams is one, Marvin Harrison Jr. is two, Malik Neighbors is three. And if Malik Neighbors was in last year's class, he would have been my number one overall player. So I think very, very highly of Malik Neighbors. I think that if you're betting maybe on the ceiling, I can understand with Malik Neighbors, because he just doesn't have a limitation. I mean, you can nitpick, maybe he's not the biggest, he's right around 200 pounds, but he plays stronger than he looks. And he's got that gliding acceleration. He has a little bit of wiggle. He can make guys miss. And when the ball is in his hands, he can just eliminate pursuit angles with that acceleration. So there's no bet. If you're going to compare the yards after the catch, Neighbors wins hands down against Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, I think with Marvin Harrison Jr., one of the reasons I put him just ahead is I think he's more advanced technically. Even with his route running, with his ability to set up defensive backs, like, he'll tell you he does not like running go routes or fades, because he wants to show off how good of a route runner he is. His ability to sink his weight and be able to get a defender to turn his back and find his blind spot and turn him around and then go get open, he prides himself on that ability. So I think in the NFL, obviously, that's such a big part of it, is being technically sound, well-schooled with what you're doing as a route runner. And that little bit of that extra seasoning that Marvin Harrison Jr. has is one of the reasons I lean him over Neighbors. But I certainly understand the explosiveness that Malik Neighbors offers. If you want plays of 20-plus yards, nobody had more plays of 20-plus yards this year than Malik Neighbors. He had one in every single regular season game. So it wasn't even like the peaks and the valleys. Every single game you watched, he was making big plays, just a dynamic athlete. I don't think you can go wrong with either of these two players. And I throw Roma Dunze in there as well. These top three receivers are legitimate, all three legitimate number one guys. Just all a little bit different.
Dane, Jordan Silvera has a question. He's asking for clarification on your round projection in the Beast. Tavondre Sweat is projected in the fourth round. Is that projection based on prospect grade or otherwise?
More otherwise than anything. We have to. It's hard for those of us on the outside to get a best sense of medicals and character. Last year, a great example, Puka Nacua had a day two grade on him and then dropped him because of the medicals. And, he ended up going a little bit later in the draft. But, when you look back, should have kept his grade maybe closer to where it was based just on the tape and the talent. With Tavondre Sweat, it's tough because you have a player that had a little bit of a reputation as an underclassman. He turned it around as a senior this past year. I had teams tell me that he did, he was working overtime to convince them that, hey, that's all in my past. And, if you're taking an optimistic point of view, okay, he played really well as a senior. But why did it take until his senior year to really, turn things on? But then 3 weeks before the draft, he has the DWI. And it's like, okay, DWIs by themselves are obviously a terrible thing. But the fact that you would make that judgment call 3 weeks before the draft, what do we do with that? And that's something that every team will look at a little bit differently. Everyone's got their own appetite for risk, and so some teams they're out on Tavondre Sweat, won't be on their board. Other teams are okay. Well, if he falls to us in the fourth round, fifth round, maybe that's where we take our chance on him. But everyone's going to look at the situation a little bit differently, and so for those of us on the outside, you can't just totally ignore medicals or character concerns. You can't ignore it. You just have to try and factor it in as best you can. And with Sweat, that's a pretty good example of that.
Yeah, he's going to be the wild card, I think, of this draft, exactly where he goes. And it's just for what you just said. Every team's going to look at it differently. They look at character situations differently. The teams that are really interested, obviously there's going to be teams where he's not even a scheme fit for. So Regardless of what he did a couple of weeks ago, that's not going to mean anything. But for the teams where they had high interest because he did fit what they were doing, they're going to have to do their homework. And you don't have a whole lot of time to get it done. So now it's like you got to go back to Texas and find out even more where you thought you had a thorough background evaluation of them. It's like, no, I guess I didn't, because now I got to find out, is this a one-time thing or is this something I got to worry about going forward, especially if we take them? Because that, could end up being a waste of pick.
Yeah, indeed. But Dane, Mohamed Kamara is someone that you've got 18 on your edge rushers. I think Greg has him a little higher in his own personal player grades. Can you guys talk about Mo Kamara for a minute or so?
Yeah, he's fun, right, Greg? I mean, he is an intense competitor. There's a touch of craziness to him, which is great. That's what you want in an edge rusher. He launches out of his stance, plays with physicality, which you like to see. It's not just speed. He will play with his hands. You love the fact that he's a team captain. The coaches speak highly of him. He was productive, which is always a good thing. Combined the last 2 years, 33 tackles for loss. The lack of size, below average arm length, those are two areas where I think might limit what he can be at the next level, where we're looking at more of a sub-package player as opposed to someone that's going to give you, you know, starting reps and high-volume snaps. And it, that's my biggest worry with him. So that's why I have more of a mid to late fifth-round grade on him, just because I think he's more of a complementary piece than a true A-plus player for your defensive line. But he's going to be part of a rotation. And if that's if I'm a team that's looking for that third or fourth pass rusher, I probably have him rated a little bit higher just because that's what I'm looking for. I compared him to kind of a similar but maybe a little bit lesser version of an Ogbo Okoronkwo, the Browns pass rusher formerly of Oklahoma, and another guy undersized but just finds ways to get to the quarterback and disrupt the backfield action. So if you're looking for a guy that can give you that disruption as part of a committee as a pass rusher, to me, that's where Kamara fits best.
See, I like him a little better, and the reason being, and the guy I used as a comp was Brandon Graham. And coming out, you know, Graham's been playing in the league now, what, 15 years, 14 years?
Yeah.
But coming out, they're almost the same size. They are the same height. The arm length is the same. Kamara is about a tenth and a half faster in the 40. Graham had a little more bulk. I think he had him by about 8 pounds coming out, you know, combine weight to combine weight. But then you found Philly played a scheme where he could fit. So I think it gets down to scheme fit. I think he can play in the defense they play here in Chicago, because I know, you know, having worked under that defense with Lovey for years, I know what the edge guys got to do. They got to get upfield. They got to be able to pressure the quarterback. That's their number one job. So he's going to be rated higher here, I believe, than, say, by a team that's asking their defensive ends to do something entirely different than they are here.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because all 32 teams are looking for more pass rush help and more pass rush depth. And so Kamara has shown that he can do that. And, yeah, what you said about finding the right fit, that's so key. A lot of these guys, we can have the report and have our projection. If they don't go to the right spot, if they go to a team that doesn't use them correctly or it's the right scheme fit, then, you know, it's going to look like we missed on the player, when in reality they maybe just didn't go to the right spot for them. And so that where these guys land is such a huge critical factor in determining success.
Dane, I know you got to leave, but if you can quickly give us a response to your thoughts on Ryan Flournoy, who has been visiting with a lot of teams in their top 30 visits, including the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, well, a local kid, right? I mean, he's from just south of Chicago, kind of born and raised in that area. Older player and smaller school player, which never a great combination. But we're talking about a day three receiver who has a little bit of size to him, really good speed, catches the ball well. And I was encouraged by what he could do after the catch as well. So he maybe not the most developed in terms of a route runner, and it's only going to get tougher at the NFL level where everything's based off of timing, and as a route runner needs to get better, needs to clean up some of the footwork issues and you know, what he's doing on the outside. But I like the talent. I think this is a player that can win at the NFL level. He has the speed for it. He can win down the field. He has, for a bigger guy, he sinks well, can make those short area cuts. There's a lot of things that give me optimism as you want to develop him. And, you know, he's ideally, you want a 21-year-old that you're developing, and he's going to be a 25-year-old rookie. So that's not ideal. But again, I think when you look at his story and his past and, you know, the way he's been able to contribute, especially the last 2 years at Southeast Missouri State, I think that there's a lot to like about him moving forward. So has all the tools that you want. It's just a matter of, okay, what's our development plan for him to get where he needs to be to get on the field, start his career as a fourth or fifth receiver, and then do we eventually see him being able to compete for a number three spot? Or, you know, how quickly can we get him there? That's the question that I think teams are debating on a player like this. But, yeah, he's talented. More talented than skilled, but a really talented player nonetheless.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head with him. There's a lot of natural talent there, but you know, given the age, it's like, okay, we don't have as much time as we have with a 21 or 22 year old. So he has got to, and a lot of it has to do with what's upstairs, he's got to be able to develop quickly, because if he doesn't, then the time's going to run. His clock is going to be a lot quicker than, say, with a 21-year-old that has equal amount of physical talent. But, hey, Dane, I know you got to run. You got another commitment. But thank you very, very much. And where are you going to be for the draft? You're going to be home, or are you going to go into Detroit?
I'll be in Detroit. We're the Athletic here. We're going to do a show. Myself, Robert Mays, Nate Tice will be in Detroit doing a live show for Thursday night, Friday night, first three rounds, every pick. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of good discussions. And you know, I've got so much respect for you, Greg, obviously, over the years. It's been good to get to know you better and learn from you. And so that's been awesome. So this has been a really fun conversation going through some of these players.
And tell us again where people can get the Beast.
You just need to be a subscriber to The Athletic, and it's included. So, you know, if you're signed up for a month or a year, it's included as part of it. And again, if you're a casual draft fan or a diehard, there's something in here for everybody. No other place you're going to find NFL verified testing information for almost 2,000 players and, you know, reports for over 400 guys with all the background information, all the analysis, all the details that I think fans will find interesting. So, again, just sign up on The Athletic, and it'll be included to download.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Now, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Take care, Dave.
Okay. Have a good one.
Awesome. Awesome guest there, Greg. Thank you for making that possible. Dane Brugler from The Athletic. The Beast is an incredibly comprehensive.
It's,
you know,
a beast.
It's one of those. Yeah, it really is. It's probably a beast for him to put together. I read that he works year round on that. And you got to. Yeah. To acquire all that information.
When you look at the amount of information that he puts in that, so now he's writing up, let's say, round figure 400 players, which is more than, you know, 265 are going to get drafted, or 255 rather are going to get drafted. So he's doing an extra 150 players, and you got to go, you get the background. And now, which makes it even harder, is you've got transfers. Like I wrote up a player, two players, the last couple days for some agents that I work for that will be in next year's draft. One guy's on his third school and another guy's on his third school. So now guys like that, Dane's got to go back and you got to have the stuff from school A, school B, school C. I remember I wrote one of the reports. I go, because this guy was a starter now at two different schools. Why would he keep transferring? And the only thing I can come up with, and I wrote it in the report, is this guy chasing NIL money, which could very well be a possibility. And if that's the case, then, you know, if he's just keeps switching schools for the paycheck, what's he going to be like in the pros? You know, because you got to be playing for more than just the money, especially when you get to this level.
Yeah, it makes total sense. There were a couple of questions issued while he was here, but I think you're as good as anybody to answer these questions, and maybe better than anybody. Badass wants to know, are pro scouts involved with the college draft? I think that's a great question. What is their role in the NFL draft?
You know what? It's a good question, and it's going to change from team to team. I worked with Philly as a consultant for 1 year, and Louis Riddick was the director of pro scouting at that time. Louis did a lot of work for the draft. He didn't write up as many guys. He did more like over-the-top type stuff, but he had a very strong and valid opinion on a lot of guys. When I was here, our pro guys did nothing for the draft. Ooh. Pro guys did pro, college guys did college. And the same thing with, except for me, none of my college guys did pro stuff. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it used to be in the preseason that you would send your scouts to a different preseason game, sometimes two preseason games during the week, just to get a look at some of the young players and now, especially the way tape is, when you're going to have the tape literally the next day and it's digitized, why do you got to send somebody to the game? When you're at a game, you only can watch one person on a play. So it's like you could think somebody played good when, unless you're watching the quarterback, because that's a different story. Right. But if, you know, you're watching, so you got to watch an offensive lineman, you got to watch a defensive lineman, you got to watch a DB. You know, you try to look for down and distance situations where you're trying to get a play where this guy might be a difference maker within that particular play, but you could guess wrong. And you could think a guy played good based on the limited numbers of plays you saw in a game live, and then you turn on the tape and you find out, oh, it's a little bit different than I thought it was. So It's I think game scouting is – it's a lot different. When I was with the Giants, my boss put a lot into it. I particularly, except for a quarterback, I don't think it's fair to put as much into it for just the reason I said. You can't. It's impossible to watch every play, especially if you got, you know, a few guys to watch. And there's some games you go to, there's six or seven guys that are on the list. You can't watch six or seven guys in one game. It's impossible.
That's great. I remember one of the Bears assistant coaches saying, if you're giving scouting reports on more than one player a game, then you're really not watching that one player. Meaning, you know, there's 22 players on a football field. It's impossible for your eyes to be focused on more than one player when you're scouting. So that's interesting. Some more questions. Let's get to some of these. Arnie asks, how telling are the top 30 visits on who a team will draft? If Alt or Thomas did not make a visit, is it unlikely that either one of those guys will be drafted by the Chicago Bears? Tell us about those 30 visits, and does that when someone does not visit Hallisaw, are they being excluded from the draft process by that team?
Yeah. Part of this is a funny answer. Because we would play, when I was there, we played games with it. Almost half of the 30 visits were guys that weren't at the combine, that we wanted to get a medical on, that we liked. And we drafted, every year I was there, we drafted at least one non-combine guy. One year, I think, where we had a lot of draft picks, I think we had 12 draft picks, we drafted three non-combine guys, all day three guys. But you know, you want to bring him in. You're not going to draft a guy unless you have a medical. So they weren't at the combine. You got to get the medical. But the other reason is with some of those guys, you want to recruit them. They're going to be undrafted free agents, and the best way to recruit them, excuse me, is get them in the building, let them meet us, let them meet who their position coach is going to be, and have a plan in mind. So you have this set up before they even get here. You know, this is the reason why I hope you get drafted. We're not going to draft you. That's how honest we were with these people. If you get through the draft, we want to sign you, and this is why. And then you'd have a plan for them, and you'd have the position coach help sell that plan.
I like that approach.
Yeah. Now, we didn't bring in a lot of top guys sometimes. Like, we would intermingle. The year we took Tommy Harris, we brought Tommy Harris in. The year before, guys we took in the first, second round, we didn't bring them in at all. We went and visited them. And you don't tell people who you're visiting. So, because we know everybody keeps track of this stuff. So it was a matter of just trying to play games with the other teams, more the other teams than the media. I mean, there's people in the media that keep track of it, but the other teams keep track of it. The other teams also keep track of who's at a pro day. You know, who's there? Not only are the Chicago Bears there and the New York Giants and the Detroit Lions, but who from the Chicago Bears are there? Is it an area scout or is it a coordinator? Something like that, you know what I mean? Because the higher up the ladder means the more importance there is of somebody on that team during that pro day, that guy is sitting in the stands watching the workout. So knowing this, we just always tried to play games. Now, just from watching what Ryan Poles has done since he's been here, he hasn't drafted anybody in a premium round that he hasn't brought in.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay. So I'm talking like first, second round, maybe even into the third round. So using that as an example, now only about 22 names or something like that have been released. So that means there's 8 names that haven't been released. And like he brought up Thomas, he very well could have been brought in. We just don't know about it.
Right, right. And the same thing with Eric has a question here. He says, on that note, it's telling that Marvin Harrison Jr. has only visited the Cardinals and the Bears. But that's what the media has reported. He might have visited 5 other teams. Who knows right. How many?
Yeah. A lot of teams tell the agent and the player, we don't want anybody to know you're here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you specifically ask them to do that, they will be quiet about it because they know you're going to get pissed off if you don't. So, but it's generally agents who release the information to begin with. The agent's the guy who, you know, calls up Ian Rappaport or Schefter or whatever and says, you know, so-and-so's making a visit here today and he's making another visit here tomorrow because he's trying to drum up interest for his client.
Makes sense.
But again, if the team says we don't want it out, then you got to respect that.
All right. More questions. Tim Willis, co-host of the Willis Twin Towers on Fridays here on the Barroom Network. Is there a player, Greg, in this draft that if they are at number 9, you're taking them no matter what?
No.
Really?
Really? No, I get it that if one of the receivers is there, that it's a good discussion. And I've said several times before, the discussion isn't necessarily next Thursday night, week from Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking place now. It's taking place next Monday. You know, they're going to iron that out then. Okay, here's what we're going to do. And they make that plan because that's part of developing a strategy for the draft, and you start doing that, you know, probably middle of this week into next week, your board's done. The thing that's amazing is so many people think the board's already set up, and that is it. They're just finishing it right now.
Okay.
I had a discussion with a guy the other day, and I just laughed at him on Twitter. And he goes, well, the Eagles board's been done for a month. I said, I worked for the Eagles board, or the Eagles once. I know when their board gets done. And it wasn't done a month ago. You know, and first of all, a month ago, you don't have all the information in. You still had pro days going on. You're only halfway through the pro days. You haven't had any of your 30 visits yet. And your coach's grades haven't been integrated into the system yet, because that's when they're getting involved. So for somebody to even think that is just totally absurd. But, you know, they don't know how the process actually works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. A Scottish Bear wants to know, so you would not necessarily take Neighbors at 9 if Neighbors...
Yeah, I know he's not going to be there, so I wouldn't even, you know, why... If he's not the first receiver, he's going to be the second receiver. And that's going to be determined by who takes, you know, what's the ranking of the receivers by the team that takes the receiver first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if they got Harrison first, they'll take Harrison. If they got Neighbors first, they'll take Neighbors.
Okay.
You know, so I don't think there's any way in hell that he's there. I think the only guy that could be there is Romo Dunze.
Okay, so let me put it this way, because I like to fantasize that I'm the decision maker for the Chicago Bears.
Okay.
And so you are my director of scouting, the man that I'm most hold responsible and trust in his opinion on who to draft. I'm saying to you, Greg, I really think it's necessary for us to walk away with two blue chip players in this draft. We're going to take Caleb with the first overall pick. At 9, tell me what blue chip players might fall to 9 and give me an order that you would prefer for us to list on our board.
I'm going to run around that a little bit.
Okay.
Because as we've talked about, I'm a package guy. You know, when you're, Caleb's done. You got him. That's a given. So now I got number 9, and I don't pick again till 75. So I got to look at, and what are the grades of the players I got? Now, if there's a significant difference on the board between player A and player B, and say player A is a receiver and player B is an edge, right. You got to go with the receiver, okay? But if they're the same, then, you can lean towards the better need. And here's the reason why. Is, again, looking at the package, I know I can get a good receiver at 75.
Right.
That the depth of this draft tells me that. I don't know I can get a good edge player at 75. I might not be able. Now, if you told me that I'd be looking at Mo Kamara, Brennan Jackson, Poole from Utah, and it might be one other guy. If I were guaranteed that they were there at 75, then I might say, okay, take the receiver. But I don't know that. I mean, because I know in this particular scheme, like there's a lot of people that like the Western Michigan defensive end, Nealon. I don't. He doesn't have any sack production. He had 4.5 sacks this year and 1.5 the year before. And it's like, why am I drafting an edge who can't rush the passer? And he had 4.5 sacks, not taken away from him as a football player. In the right scheme, he can be a pretty good player. In this scheme, you better be able to rush the passer. And, so I think it's why am I taking a guy who can't rush the passer? And I don't see anything on tape that tells me that anything's going to switch for him once he gets to our level. He's playing in the MAC, and he had 4.5 sacks in the MAC. Okay, yeah. That's not playing in the SEC, not playing in the Big Ten. He did have a sack against Iowa. But so to me, that guy, I don't want that guy. I want somebody who's got production, who has shown that they can do it at the level they're at.
By the way, it makes total sense. And this is what Dane Brugler says about Marshawn Nealon. Overall, Nealon is still taking classes in the art of the pass rush, but he is charged up into contact and displays twitch throughout his frame, which allows him to defeat blockers in different ways. He projects as a starting base end whose best football is yet to come. And as you said, he had 4.5 sacks last year, 2 forced fumbles, and Brugler has him ranked number 5. So I should have picked Nealon for you guys to compare notes on, because that would have been a good discussion.
No, and he had the other day, he posted on X that he's a guy that he thinks could be a borderline first.
Mm-hmm.
So, and really because of that, I went back and said, because I knew that when I wrote him up for the people I worked for, I wasn't that high on him. I was like more of a third round type of guy. And so I went back and looked. In fact, I did it yesterday. And it's like, no, it's not changing. Because, again, but I'm thinking this scheme now. So what they're asking the ends to do, what the edge players are supposed to do for the Chicago Bears in this scheme right now today, I think you put 20, 25 pounds on him, you move him inside to a three tech, you might have a hell of an inside pass rusher. Different story. But I can't see him being an edge in this scheme. So and that's my opinion. And by the way, there's a couple of guys I wanted to bring on because they were brought up last week, you know, what I thought about him, and I hadn't done enough. One was Michael Hall from Ohio State.
Yes.
That sucker's a freaking player now. And, it wouldn't shock me. His numbers, he did not work out at the combine. Guess what he ran on his pro day? 4.75 Ooh, that's the best defensive tackle time I've seen in a while. Now, we're getting into Tommy Harris territory right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it wouldn't shock me that if he went, you know, one of those 25 to 40 guys, he goes as high as 25. And, you know, again, it's flavor and what team's picking and what they're looking for. But him, the guy from LSU, Mason Smith, he's a good freaking football player. And I like Gabe Hall from Baylor.
Yeah.
You know, I think all of them could play three in this scheme.
Back to our questions here, Greg. You know, when you and Dane were talking about, you know, how scouts have different evaluations and so forth. So Bruce Ollie Walter Jordan asked, do those scouts then tend to average out these individual grades? So if, you know, one scout says, I got him at a 9.0, and another one says an 8.0. So would they average that out to an 8.5 or whatever the grading system is?
No. You got to put him at what the general consensus is of what he's going to be. Remember I said this, is that we get into one of our February meetings. So the coaches' stuff isn't involved in the February meetings. It's just the scouts' grades and the cross-checker. And if there was a big difference between what I had and either the area scout had or the cross-checker had, then it was, okay, we got to watch some tape and watch it together. And my rule was, I know what you like, so I'm going to try to look at this tape through your eyes, and you know how I feel about the player. I want you to look at it through my eyes. And then let's see, as we're watching, if we can, you know, if I'm going to gravitate towards what you think, you're going to gravitate towards what I think, or we're still going to be apart. And if you're still, you know, a ways apart, then you can't really take the guy because you're not going to have a, you know, a consensus opinion. Mm-hmm. But to get to the question, it's, you don't really average out. It's not about, remember I've said this, it's not about being right, or it's not about who's right, it's about being right. Mm-hmm. And it's getting in the right grade. And when the coaches get involved, now one thing we used to do with the coaches, we didn't have them put a number grade on because they didn't understand the numbering system. So they could put a grade on it and not, and it could screw up the whole system because they don't, they're not used to doing it all the time. So we simplified it for him. He can start for us. He can be a quality backup for us. He can make our team. He can't make our team. Basically, I mean, that's telling you what the grade is. And yeah, so if he's saying he can start for us, it means he's better than what we got on the team. He's going to walk in as a rookie and he's going to be a starter for us. So that tells me what, and so, now, if the coach feels that way and the scouts feel that way, well, then you've got to have him, you know, pretty high up on your board because everybody thinks he's going to be a starter.
Yeah. Okay. Scottish Bear has another question. With the draft just over a week away, with the new information available on Caleb, do you still have the same concerns as you did a few months ago? Are you getting excited about Caleb Williams?
I'm excited about his talent. The talent speaks for itself. And I go back, I wrote up that, you know, and Windy City Gridiron. I'm not going to be comfortable with the other stuff until I see different. And I hope, you know, he's a Bear. I'm a fan. I mean, it's a given. He's a Bear. So until he gets here, signs a contract, and we see exactly what he does and how he acts and how he buys into the program and how the veterans buy into him, then, you know, it's a wait and see. I mean, the talent's there. There's no question about the talent. He's got the talent to be really, really good. The only thing I'm afraid of is that people got him, especially what happened in Houston last year with CJ, is that they're going to expect too much. And so then if this team doesn't make the playoffs, is that Caleb Williams' fault? Or is that Flus's fault or whatever? There's a whole shitload of circumstances it could be. And, you know, and until it actually happens, we're not going to know exactly what it is.
Okay. Another question from our followers. Levante says, Greg, could the discussion be at the number 9 pick, a discussion of what was the status quo in previous regimes versus this new one? For example, previous ones would have gone defense instead of offense. And in fact, Greg, the last 2 years under Ryan Poles, it seems like the draft, Poles has drafted more for Eberflus's needs than the offense's needs, so to speak. So what do you think about that, that this could be a draft that's more dedicated towards offense to try to level things off?
Well, I can answer that by saying the key guys they signed in free agency were offense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Got a running back. You got a tight end. If you want to include Keenan Allen in free agency, you've traded for him. You got another number one type wide receiver. So didn't we just take care of offense? You know.
Well, I mean,
I look at it this way too, and. Again, part of it is the depth of the draft. I know I can get a good receiver in the third round. Not a doubt in my mind that I can get a good – I mean, a guy that can step in and be like the number three receiver, because I've studied these guys good enough to know that. But this is a defense that's predicated on the pass rush. And there's one pass rusher on this team. And yeah. – You know, we had Alex Brown. Adonijé was like the number three guy, and he was pretty good. There was a year when he had like 7.5 sacks as a backup. You know, we had Gunlier. I mean, we had solid edge players on both sides, so you couldn't double team. You don't have somebody across from Montez Sweat. Sweat's going to draw a double team, and you're going to take away his effectiveness. And so that means if you go wide receiver, and that's a possibility, you got to hope that you luck out, but probably got to try to get a vet somehow. But when you look at what's out there, there's shit out there. You know, it's bring back Ngakoue. Because, like, that's the only guy that's left. And, you know, I go back to, like, last year. And in free agents, and they got into free agency, and one of the big needs was getting a right tackle. And they went on, they tried to sign McGlinchey, but the money got too high, especially the guaranteed money. So right away he said, and he didn't like the other guys. So it was like, okay, we didn't get him. I'll draft one. Mm-hmm. Well, you look at this year. There was guys that you know they had like as defensive ends. They got a shitload of money.
Yeah.
So what's that tell me? I got to go draft one. You know, I think it's his – I'm just going on history here. And so – but what's neat is, you look at the – the visits that we know of, top four edge rushers and the top three receivers have all made visits. So, I mean, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know. But what we haven't seen visit-wise is those third-round type guys. Have any, you know, so, you know, it's not, again, there's probably seven or eight names that we don't know about that have made visits or will make visits by Wednesday. Wednesday of this week is the last day you can bring a guy in. But like I said a little while ago, if I knew I could get a certain, if I was guaranteed that I could get a certain few guys in the third round, then I'd have no problem going with wide receiver. But I go back to, it's just the way I was brought up in the business. You know, I want to look at the package too. I got to take care of the team, and you got a defensive head coach and a defensive scheme that relies on the pass rush.
Yeah.
And there's one pass rusher on this team.
Unfortunately, that's it. As of today, Bruce Ollie Walter Jordan asked, do you consider Caleb a blue chip player, including his character? Where are you with Caleb in terms of ranking him blue chip, red chip, etc.?
No, he's a blue chip player. I mean, is there issues that he's got to overcome? In my opinion, yes. But you can't take anything away. His talent's rare.
Mm-hmm.
Talent is great. You're never going to get me off the talent. I do have, and I don't know if, you know, you're not at USC, you don't know what happened. But that team started off really good. And then they, and it's not just him. His play fell off after Notre Dame game, but the team stunk after that. I mean, they just kept losing and losing and losing. And it's like, what was going on there? You know, and you're not going to know unless you make a, you know, a school call and you do some in-depth investigation. You know, what was going on in the locker room? There's some talented football players there. Why did this team all of a sudden just go down the shits, you know, the shithole that last half of the season? And it wasn't, you know, Caleb didn't play as well, but to be fair, the offensive line didn't play good and the defense didn't exist. So yeah. What was going on?
Yeah, it seems to be the prevailing opinion among many people that because of the players around him, he was trying to play hero ball, and the offensive line betrayed him. The defense was horrendous, so he's playing from behind on many games, and so he was playing hero ball, and that really disrupted his progress from that Heisman Trophy winning year to his final year at USC. But we'll see. He's got a lot to learn at the NFL level, and the only answers that are really going to be provided are what he does on the football field wearing the Bears jersey. Some more questions here. J2K says, in his opinion, 9 to 15 or 18 is going to be more about preference than overall grade. That's why he loves the idea of trading back to 11 and 14 range. Greg, you've talked about that, the possibility of trading back. Do you want to add to that thought?
I don't disagree with that. I think if you go back, I got to look at the chart to get the number. Three might not be far enough, but I know four is. You're going to get a third. Mm-hmm. And if a team's really trying to get up to that spot, there's only three, say it's number whoever has 12, and I can't read that because I'm using my phone, and so sure. I can't see what that says. What are the okay. points at 12?
12 is 1,200 and 9 is 1,350, so 150 point difference.
250 points, isn't it? 950, 1050, 1150. Come on, Aldo. You had, what do you have, a 375 on your math SAT?
Less than that.
okay, so that's 250 points. What's the middle? What's the points in the middle of the second round?
Okay, middle of the second round.
I can't read it.
You're at
more like
at
400, 50, right?
Yeah, pick 50 is 400, right?
Yeah, so you got to go back one more pick. And So now you're talking 13, 14 range. If you want to get a second round pick, you got to go back to like 17, 18. But now if you go back that far, you're taking your way, or chances are, you're taking yourself out of the quality players. And you want to come back, you want to come out of this draft with two really good quality football players. And so I think trying to get that two is what you know you're going to get a good player. You're just not going to get what you'd really want on the football team, and that's two star quality blue chip, or as close to blue chip as you can get. You know, part of it's, you know, how you got the guys graded and how they turn out. But it's you know, if you want to get into the second, then if you trade back and you get a third, now you got two thirds. There's ways you can, and using a pick next year, there's ways you can get into the second.
Yeah.
Okay. You got to have somebody willing to do that. You know, a team willing to buy that, but there is ways to do it. And you know, we're not going to find that out until Friday night, you know, of the draft, if that in fact happens. Because none of that is going to happen now. The reason being is when you're trading up for a specific player in most cases. So if somebody wants to get to nine, they're getting to nine to get player A, not to get in that range to be in that nine range. They're the guy they want. Now, when you do what Minnesota did and you traded early, then it was to get the ammo to be able to move up again. But they're not going to move up again until they know they can get one of the quarterbacks.
Right.
So they got that. That can't happen until you see how they come off the board.
All right. Let's. I got a few more questions here I would like to get to. Let's see. Here's an interesting question. Greg, do you anticipate Caleb holding out? And I'd like to rephrase that question is, what are the odds that Caleb will hold out? Because I got a feeling the Bears are going to guarantee his contract 100%.
It is guaranteed 100%. He's a first-round pick.
So for all
all first-round picks got guaranteed contracts.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. So I learned something every day.
It's, you know, some of it's structure. But you're basing it off of the number one pick last year. The salary cap went up, and the slots for the first round will also go up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's 10%, I don't know what it is, but he's going to have a slotted figure.
Right.
So you go back and look what Bryce Young got and add a couple dollars to that. And that's going to be what Caleb's contract is.
Right. Yeah, now, I can't imagine him holding out for any reason.
Well, the guy, you know, Roquan Smith did.
That's true. Some
of that is structure and how, even though the money's guaranteed, it's when do you get some of that money?
Yeah, right.
And stuff. So it's and I think back when Roquan came in, not every first round pick was, but he was a top 10 pick, but they weren't. It's like now it's like every first round pick is guaranteed. You got a guaranteed deal. He's seeing every dollar of that.
If I remember correctly, Roquan, and when he entered the NFL as a Chicago Bear, he held out until mid camp. Is that my memory serving me right?
Yeah. Right. Was and part of it was his agent was Brian Arault, and Joey Lane, who was Ryan Pace's contract guy, didn't see eye to eye on anything. You know, I know Arault didn't like Joey Lane. I can't tell you what Joey Lane thought of Arault. Joey Lane, by the way, just got a vice president of football administration with Seattle.
Oh, wow. Good for him.
Like last week. So, and he was last year, he was doing contracts for Green Bay. I don't know if he was the official guy, but he was doing contracts for Green Bay last year.
Interesting. Sam Rush says, Caleb is already rich, and the marketing deals that he'll receive makes it hard to believe that he'll hold out because of money. You know, I wouldn't be shocked by anything nowadays, Sam, but I agree with you. The guy is swimming in money, and so there might be some language in the contract that he's going to be a stickler for. I know that he wants to build that brand. He's going to look for every opportunity to build his Caleb Williams brand, because we're not just drafting a quarterback here. We're drafting a brand. And does that worry you at all, Greg? Is that, you know, there's the speculation that he is trying to build his superstardom before he's actually played a snap in the National Football League?
You know, in fairness, I don't know if that's all him or his dad.
Yeah.
And doing all that. I know dad is... There's questions. Dad had hired a guy, an agent. This was told to me during the combine, mm-hmm. to look into the feasibility of, is there a way that I can get by the CBA and get a better deal? But just the fact that it's a CBA, it's a negotiating deal. There ain't no way he's getting around it. <That's>... so it's like it's flawed. And so the figure is going to be the figure. Mm-hmm. You like it, lump it, or whatever. You know. Right. And after he's played 3 years in the league, he can get an extension. Like mm-hmm. the day after the season ends. He can get an extension. So, I mean, that's what the rules are. And I don't think there's anything dad can do that can change that.
Yep. And you can hear the messaging from Bears players themselves. They keep saying things like, he has to be humble when he comes in. He has to, you know, work his way in, you know. And so it's – I think some of those players have heard those things about Caleb Williams, and that's what they're trying in between words, trying to relay, is that don't come into our locker room thinking that you're better than any one of us because you made all this NIL money and you're going to be driving in a Rolls Royce or whatever you'll be driving. So it's a little bit of a concern, but again, you know, if he plays like a Patrick Mahomes in his second NFL year, if he gets there immediately, it won't be that big of a concern anymore.
No, it's, you know, what have you done for me lately? I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I was here when we had a problem with a rookie, and that was Sed.
Mm-hmm.
And it really had nothing to do with Sed, and it had everything to do with Thomas Jones. And so Thomas Jones was the vet's guy, and they didn't like that we drafted another running back. And it was, you know, Lovey was really pushing hard for Sed for whatever reason, and I don't remember all the reasons because it was got close to 20 years ago now. 19 years ago, I guess. So it, you know, then the veterans all sided with Thomas Jones, obviously, and they made things tough for Sed. And Sed didn't help himself because, you know, that was before there was a rookie salary cap and all that, and Eugene Parker was his agent, and Eugene's a tough negotiator. And, you know, he held out well into the preseason. So, you know, he had that part going against him. And the fact that Thomas Jones was already here, and it just made for a tough situation. You know, but Jason McKee, I don't know if Jason said that on here or he said in a conversation with me, he was, you know, his locker was like right in between the two of them. And he had to be like the peacemaker. He says, I'm listening to Thomas in one ear and Sed in the other ear. And I,
oh my gosh. You know, so something.
It was, and he goes, I think they did it purposely too. Because, you know, Jason's just really a good person.
Yeah. I just want to reply to Troy's comment here. He writes, I haven't heard the Bears saying they are all in on Caleb. Did I miss something? No, I think all of the Bears players are all in on Caleb, because every one of them that I've heard in interviews, and I'm talking about Jalen Johnson, I'm talking about Montez Sweat, et cetera, they all know that Caleb is going to be the next Bears quarterback. And so they're buying into it. When asked about, you know, what advice they would have for Caleb, they just offer these precautionary words. Be humble. Be focused on being a leader. Don't think it's all going to come easy. And those kinds of words, which are, in my opinion, good advice. All right. We've got some other questions here.
Let's just say one other thing, too. I mean,
absolutely.
Is it a lock they're taking Caleb? Well, to the best of our knowledge, they haven't brought in any of the other top three quarterbacks
mm-hmm.
on visits.
Yeah.
And they did go to their pro days, but they didn't bring anybody in on visits. Nor did Caleb go anywhere else. Caleb went one place here. Yep. And so, you know, you got to look at it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
With the first pick a week from Thursday at whatever time that is, he's going to be a Chicago Bear. Have you noticed how he's interacted with Chicago people on X lately?
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, in fact, there was the one thing that was done, you know, with AI where it says him being announced as the first pick, and he's got pink pants on, and he's walking. Have you seen
that? No, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, and he's got pink pants on, and he's walking down this thing, and he's dancing and everything, and his comment to it was, "How'd y'all do that?"
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. That's gonna. If he does something like that, I know there's gonna be a contingent of Bears fans, older guard. I don't mean old in age, but just traditionalists who don't think that
He put out last week, maybe it was Friday or something. Wait till you see the suit I got and what my lady's gonna be wearing.
Oh, very cool. That's going to make it very, very interesting. He is one of 13 players who have accepted invitations to the NFL draft for the first round. All right, let's see what we got here. Greg Berlissimo asks, why is everyone ignoring the cornerbacks in round one projections? There are at least three cornerbacks I could name. There are, the top of this cornerback class is very, very impressive. The Bears aren't going to choose one, but I think Berlissimo is just overall.
I think three is a good number.
Yeah. Overall, those three cornerbacks are really excellent, aren't they?
Yeah. No, it's a decent class of that position. It's not getting notoriety this year because you're not going to get one in the top 10. You know, this is a pretty draft, if you want to use that word. You have quarterbacks okay. and receivers at the top, you know, and a pizzazz draft where, you know, corners and edge rushers and, well, offensive line, it's a hell of an offensive line. And now that brings up a thing because people keep bringing up the offensive line. And the only offensive lineman they've brought in is Ault. I don't think Ault makes it to them.
No.
But, you know, I've been giving this some thought. What if they take an offensive lineman? I think that if that happens, say on a trade down, they trade down and then they – take one of the next offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
I can see Braxton moving inside the guard, and one of the two guards isn't going to be here much longer. Which one? I can't tell you. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. But and this is just to throw something out there, because I like Tev as a player, but Tev has not been durable. There's been stuff written, but who knows if it's true, because you never know what's true in the media, that he might not always see eye to eye with the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And he's in the last year of his contract.
Yeah.
So is he a guy they want to extend? Where Davis, Nate Davis got two more years, I think, on his contract that he signed. Granted, he didn't have a good year last year. Me personally, I'd throw a pass at him because of what he went through during the offseason and then in training camp with his mom being real ill and then finally dying. You know, that's hard for anybody. But if they went that route, that would not surprise me that Davis or Tev isn't going to be here much longer. In fact, one of them could be gone before the draft gets over. You know, and try to trade for a pick. But I admit I'm throwing a dart at the wall on that.
Yeah. Well, and I think I mentioned this last week. That's why I think that the Bears might be eyeing this guy, Troy Fautano, because of his versatility. And yes, he's a left tackle. I think
he can play inside.
Exactly. And so that versatility, we know how much the Bears covet versatile offensive linemen. And so if they trade out that 9 pick and go down a few spots, Troy might be there and he might be the choice for the Chicago Bears. I'm calling
it. And like I said, it wouldn't shock me if that's the direction they went, mm-hmm. then you're going to see an offensive lineman traded.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nate Davis, according to Do It All 36, says Nate still has 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah.
That is true, but there is a potential out on that contract that would make it less of a blow to the cap hit. So,
okay, I don't know about that part. I haven't looked at the contract, but I do know Tev is out of contract at the end of this year.
Okay.
That part's fact.
That is fact.
Last year. Yeah, that rookie contract's up after this season. And it's also a fact he hasn't been the most durable guy.
That is unfortunately true. And you know, when you say that he's had some disagreements with the Bears, I'm hoping that eventually we get to learn more of that because there has been some incidences where he's had to sit, where it's something weird was going on, that he didn't see practice time because of this or that. I'd love to get the inside story on that. Maybe we'll hear about that
someday. Well, yeah, but don't forget, though, Nate Davis. There's what's going on with Nate Davis? How come he's not here? Why is he always going home? How come he's not practicing? Well, whose business was it that his mom was dying besides none
Correct.
Of us?
Correct. Absolutely.
You know, Absolutely. And so a lot of people were jumping to conclusions. And that's why I prefaced it when we started the discussion. I said, hey, you know, I don't know if there was disagreements between I've read that there's been something, but I don't know if that's the fact.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It'll be interesting because that's a big deal. And that guy Tevin Jenkins has given the Bears offensive line an identity because he's such an outstanding run blocker and he's got this mean streak in
presence.
Him.
Yeah.
Right. So no Peter A has an interesting question. Would Tevin be a restricted free agent after this year? If not, who qualifies for those RFAs? I'm sorry?
An RFA is a guy's got 3 years. A lot, generally, nobody drafted unless they get cut and put on the practice, then their rookie contract becomes null and void. And then you're re-signing them, but it's not going to the original four-year rookie contract. But if a rookie makes the team and he continues to make the team, he's on a four-year, his original contract is 4 years. Okay, now, when you do a undrafted free agent, you might do a 2 or 3 year deal with those people. And, you know, if it's a 3 year guy, he's an RFA, he's a restricted free agent.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Let's see. What do we got here from Lefty? Is there any linebacker in this draft worth taking? I know the Bears are not interested in linebackers, but is there anyone worth a draft pick in this class that you like? While you answer that, I'll look at what Dane Brugler is saying.
No, I haven't even given it a thought because I just can't see it happening. It's one of the stronger units on the team. And right now there's only four picks, with the last one being in the fourth round. So, hasn't crossed my mind, nor will it, because I just, I don't see that or a corner being taken.
Yeah, I agree with that totally, 100%. And just for kicks here, for linebackers, Dane does not have a first-round grade on any linebacker, and his 10th overall listing of linebackers is Curtis Jacobs out of Penn State, and he's got him graded as a fifth rounder, which will give you an indication as that this is not the strongest linebacker class we've ever seen. Getting back to the cornerbacks, Tooch has an interesting question. Might some teams want to trade up with the Bears for a cornerback? So I'm looking at teams.
Could be.
So,
corner, wide receiver, tight end, offensive tackle. Could be any of those positions somebody's eyeballing. And regardless of what you see on analyst boards, it's what those teams have the guy rated. And there could be a guy, hey, we want this guy. And so where we're sitting, we don't think we can get him. So we're going to move up. We're going to try to move up and get him.
Mike's got a question. Would it be fair to look at the compensation the Chiefs gave the Bills to get Mahomes a second and a future first? Or is that skewed because they were going for a quarterback? So I guess what he is saying here is that the Bills gave the Chiefs the 10th overall pick. Was it the 10th or 11th overall pick?
I think it was the 2000. And I think the Chiefs might have been at 29 that year.
Yes.
Bills are 28. So, you're in the same ballpark.
Right.
You're going to use that as a reference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be I cannot see for the life of me Ryan Poles wanting to trade down as far as 28.
Yeah.
It's like, why? I'm trying to make my team better. Yeah, I'm going to get some picks. Yeah, I'll get a pick next year. But where I'm going to get a 28 isn't close to what I'm going to get, say, a 14.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just, could it happen? Yeah, will it happen? That would shock me.
It would shock me to go that far down, particularly in this draft. Not to say that there aren't going to be a lot of good players, but I think day three is got the potential to be kind of a snore fest, because I think there aren't a lot of intriguing names for day three. There are some, day three is not going to be.
And you know what? There's going to be UDFAs that turn out to be pretty good players.
Absolutely.
And you get into a draft like this, that can happen, because it's, and Chicago, let's just assume they stay where they are. They don't trade back. They got four picks.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go heavy into the UDFA market. Everybody has the same amount of money to spend as far as signing bonus pool, whatever it is, $125,000, whatever. It might be more than that now. I don't remember what the exact figure is, but it's how you divvy up that money. You can sign 20 guys and give them $5,000 apiece, or you can say, I'm going after the cream of the crop and I'm going to give this guy 15 and I'm going to give this guy 18, maybe even 20,000 or something like that. And because that's going to assure me of getting the guy, because I had a fifth round grade on this guy, on our board. So he's the guy we want. So he's worth spending that $20,000 for and signing bonus.
Greg Maliska asked, there are rumors out there, and of course, don't believe any rumors, but they're good to talk about, right? DC, Washington, still wants to trade up for Caleb Williams. Any thoughts on that, Greg?
Not happening. You'd be shocked. I'd be shocked. Yeah.
Oh, and
this is a done deal.
Yeah. I have to agree with that, as tempting as somebody who loves draft picks and somebody, Greg, who you love draft picks, and I, as a fan, love draft picks. It's not going to happen. No. It's not going to happen.
No, they made their decision. You know, they're just getting ready. The wedding date's next Thursday night. Week from Thursday night.
I love it.
They're just waiting for the priest and everybody to get together and get married on the podium.
That is funny.
7:10 on Thursday night next week.
There you go. Maybe Caleb should come in a wedding dress.
Whatever time it starts.
Yeah. MC Fact, McFact says, Zach Key had a good question. I missed it. Zach Key said that the quarterbacks during Greg's tenure were unsuccessful. Zach wondered why, and what should the Bears do differently in the future to prevent this? Your thoughts?
I mean, the quarterbacks we took?
Yes, I'm assuming that's what he's saying.
Well, we drafted two. One was Rex. Rex was the 22nd pick in the draft. He was the fourth quarterback taken in that draft. And there's only one who had a better career than him. That was Carson Palmer. Mm-hmm. You know, and Rex, for people that don't remember or don't care to remember, he shattered his ankle, had like 12 or 13 pins put in his ankle to correct it, and he lost one of the best parts of his game, which was his lateral mobility, because he was short. He was short and had shorter arms. So when you took away that lateral quickness, it took away his ability to slide in the pocket. But I don't even think Palmer got to a Super Bowl. Rex got to a Super Bowl. And Kyle Orton was a fourth-round pick. Kyle Orton outperformed where he got picked. No question about it. You know, so, you know, was there something wrong with what we did? Yeah, the only thing that was wrong is that, you know, we had an opportunity to select Aaron Rodgers the year we took said, but Aaron Rodgers didn't go to like 23rd in that draft. So everybody else in the league, you know, wishes they had that all over again.
You relate a really fascinating story, and the way you told it was great, but that Aaron Rodgers stopped into your interview room at the end of your interviews. You guys are packing up, and yeah, he walks in.
We're done, and it was like a little after 10 o'clock. And, you know, Lovey was gone. Jerry was gone. Ron Turner was there. I was there. I don't think Pep was the quarterback coach then. It was somebody else. And Aaron goes, I know you guys don't want to talk to me, but I want to talk to you. And just plops himself on the couch, spreads out his arms like this. It was there for a long time. That's a real long time. Like, yeah. I would say 45 minutes.
That's wild. And you described him as having his legs wide open. He's just like this.
Just relaxed as could be. And like holding court. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, he was a good guy. I mean, very, very, very likable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We talked about it the next day. Hey, you know, like, we're getting ready for the interviews that night. And Love You, Jerry. Go, well, you missed the best part of the interview last night. Well, was that Aaron Rodgers came in. Oh, what did you say?
Yeah, so, I love it. But Jerry Angeles.
You know, I got to do a Jerry thing.
Absolutely.
I'm going to run out of juice in about 8-9 minutes.
Okay, so let me ask a continuation of Zach's question here, because he writes, number three, Dan Lefevre, and effectively number four, Jake Cutler.
Cutler won the draft pick.
Right, but he's asking about why, you know, why wasn't he effective with the Bears?
Jay Cutler's problem was Jay Cutler. Mm-hmm. He was his own worst enemy. hard guy to get along with. He was right, no matter what. I mean, you know, so he was, what's the right word? Not the best guy in the meeting rooms. This Pep's first year here, or second year, and he would, you know, he would motherfuck Pep to death because he didn't like Ron Turner. Wow. And didn't believe it or Ron Turner's offense, and like, you know, and Pep didn't deserve that.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was, and Lefebvre, there's a story in that, and I got in trouble when I wrote an article about it. Because I was working for the National Football Post. We were going to take James Stark, the running back from Buffalo. And Stark's had a hell of a career up in Green Bay. We were going to take him to the fact where I went out into his office and called him.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. And then all of a sudden, no, we're taking somebody else. I said, Jerry, he's on the phone right here. We already called him. His agent had a shit set. And to the point where we probably, if he's there next round, we're taking him and we'll give him the money that he's supposed to get now, you know, signing okay. bonus and all that. And then, turned around like five picks later, he went to Green Bay. Oh, you know, so exactly what happened?
Mm-hmm.
That was my last draft year. Exactly what happened, I don't know. I wasn't in the room. Nor do I want to know.
Yeah. Something happened,
something happened because, I mean, we made the decision. And there's like 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes left on the clock. Make the phone call. My job was make the phone call. I called him. And it was, and something happened in that next 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much of the draft is about luck, isn't it?
Yeah, Lefebvre was a good quarterback in the MAC, but that doesn't mean you're going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. And his dad or uncle or somebody was like one of the big names in the Parks Department that runs the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Like I said, I wasn't in the room. I had James Stark on the phone. And then the worst part was I have to, you know, call James back and go, I'm sorry. You know, he's already celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, that was probably the hardest thing I ever did in my life.
I bet. That's an uncomfortable position. Greg, I'm going to ask one more question. There's two or three that we won't get to, guys. I've taken a picture of them, and we will ask Greg those questions next week. Arnie Lindbergh, Sam Rush, and TJ Johnson. But I'm going to end with this last question. Greg, did you use mainly poster boards with names of players you scouted, and did you have a smart board where you could do all of that electronically? So as you're preparing the draft, back then, when you were director of the draft for Chicago Bears.
What, you mean the
board
itself?
Yeah, the board itself.
The board itself was the cards were, they're on magnetic things.
So then the
card had the player's name, school, position, height, mm-hmm. weight, speed, had his grade. We had circumstances on the grade too, which I've never gone over. You know, let's say a guy was an A67. Well, there was also these circumstances that were in small numbers, 1, 2, or 3.
Right.
And the 3 was strictly test score. If his test score wasn't Wunderlich test score was, you know, high or low, he'd be if he had a real good test score of the 3, you didn't even have the 3 there. If he had a marginal test score, it was a black 3. And if he had a real low test score, then it was a red 3. Okay, the 2 was medical. So if he was fine medically, there was nothing there. If there was a concern, but not but you could draft him. It'd be a black two. A major medical concern, he's a red two.
Okay.
And the one was the circumstance could be, you know, low level of comp, played division two, switched positions a few times, new coaching staff, new system for his last year. So it affected the way he played. Is like, you know, just the circumstance that went on during his football career.
Yeah. Fascinating.
So we had those little things. So basically, you could look at the card and it told a story.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love that. Okay, so I want to let people know that next week we will be back here on Monday with Swifty from Swift Sports Network.
Might be Tuesday. If Swifty can do Monday, we'll do Monday. Otherwise, Tuesday.
Yeah, so that should be a super entertaining show. What are you guys going to do, Greg?
I don't know yet. We got to figure that out. and then we're going to do a show on Friday morning, recapping the first round. Saturday morning, recapping day two and going into day three, which could be one pick or maybe more than one pick. Well, you know, we'll know that when we're doing it. But, you know, it could be at that point there's one other pick and it's going to be coming up real quick and then everybody can go to the golf course or whatever.
There you go. And Jordan asked, because he hits his one of his favorite quarterbacks, if not his favorite quarterback in this draft, J.J. McCarthy, is he still coming on? It looks like he might not, right, Greg?
Yeah, I sent his agent, who I know very, very well, two different texts, and he has not gotten back to me, which I assume because he knows he's coming here. So why, like today he's in D.C., flew into D.C. last night. He's at D.C. all day today. Whether he's got another visit tomorrow or in the next day, that, you know, I don't know that. But he's been busy doing that stuff. And so I think that in Brian's case, he said, hey, you know, I'm not. If he's going to Chicago, he'd be on your show, but he ain't going to Chicago, so why?
Yeah.
But I want him just because he's local.
Absolutely, because he's local. And he's got such a great story to tell about his personal life and his battles with mental illness and how he's overcome those. So we'd still love to have him on after the draft or whenever. He's a fascinating young man. So I'm with Jordan. It's too bad that he's not he's likely not coming on, but maybe so. We'll find out in the weeks to come. Greg, another great show. People are very happy with Dane Brugler, you, and they tolerate me, but that's okay. We will see you all next week. Take care, everybody.
See you later. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
How do I get out of this thing here? It's on my phone.